All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to today's episode of American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. We're on our new series called America's Most Unexplained. Today, we are carrying on with episode 2, and we are talking about the Roswell incident. Now, I'm using various sources, obviously from the internet, and we're going mainly off of history.com and then a few other sites. And we'll see how far we can get through this today. This may be a two-part series. There's a lot of contextual evidence of Roswell and the supposed crash site. I would like to say that there is still plenty of conspiracy theories to be found with this. And something that we have to undertake with this, I guess you could say, investigation is that there was obviously a need for a cover-up by the United States Air Force at that point in time, by the Roswell Air Force. I think the cover-up, I don't know if you would want to label it as sloppy, but at the first chance when you get to reading the crash, and you see that it was immediately covered up as a weather balloon, and weather balloons were a form of technology that was used back then. And then you go to find out more that it was even a more secretive program, that it wasn't a weather balloon, but it was a balloon. And it was part of Operation Mogul. Operation Mogul was the United States attempts to spy upon Russia, the Soviet Union at that point in time, so that we could monitor any type of large nuclear blasts or detonations within the atmosphere. They had already been recording blasts through sonar in the water. And now, because we had the bomb, and it wasn't until, I think, 1949 when Soviet Russia ended up having the bomb. Ergo, here we are, and we're monitoring what they're doing. And there were a lot of big things that had happened back in that point in time. In 1947, when the Roswell incident happened, there was already an occurrence of over 300 investigations going into UFO sightings. The Air Force was looking into it, kind of wasn't looking into it. They really didn't take it too serious. But this incident has the most speculations out of all. One would say that it is the primogenitor of the ufology of America because of the amount of speculation, because of the amount of offshoot stories that we have also received from this, from the Roswell crash site. We have notable people like Bob Lazar, who mentioned about Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, where these vehicles, these craft, were supposedly deposited in, along with the supposed alien bodies. And also, he worked at a place called S4 of Area 51, which there's a lot of speculation, a lot of cover-up about that just within itself. And we'll get on to Bob Lazar one day. He's a very interesting man to talk about. But for right now, I'm going to stick to the basics of the content that I can find just for Roswell. And what I would like for you to do, a little bit of homework for you. Take what I'm going to read to you. Do your own research. Let's see what you can come up with. Now, I'm kind of pressed for time today, so I didn't get to throw all of the hours that I normally spend into this on it. And that's why I'm saying there'll probably be a part two so I can deep dive, because this is just the surface of what was told to us that the Roswell incident was. And so we're going to be looking at documents from the Air Force. We're going to be looking at government documents, also the blessings of the media, and also the local sheriff's department that was there for this. Now, real quick, there are plenty of speculations that the rancher that found the crash site, that found the loose materials in the desert that he collected and brought to the local sheriff, there are plenty of materials that he was bought off by the Air Force. There's plenty of material evidence from eyewitnesses that he knows that says that he was bought off by the Air Force and or physically threatened and accosted by the Air Force. The problem with a lot of this speculation is that it is just that, speculation. Now, there are plenty of other experts who have probably broken this down piece by piece in a much better, manageable way than what I'm about to do it. But once again, that's not really the point. That would be for you, the listener, to do, to really dig into Roswell. For me, I just need to be able to give you the history of what the UFOs across America are and what the, from the most minor to the most major incidents are. And what I want to see is the parallel of the government responses to all this. Being that I worked for the government for 14 years, I'm interested. So without further ado, let's get started. By the way, today is March 24th, 2022. And we are still alive, so praise God. All right, let's get started. And this is from history.com. In the summer of 1947, a rancher discovered unidentifiable debris in his sheep pasture outside Roswell, New Mexico. Although officials from the local Air Force base asserted that it was a crashed weather balloon, many people believed that it was the remains of an extraterrestrial flying saucer. A series of secret dummy drops in New Mexico during the 1950s heightened their suspicions. Now, the dummy drops, which doesn't make too much sense here, but once again, we're looking at more of a cover up and cover over than we are an actual explanation. In the 1950s, the dummy drops began, but in the 1947 is when the crash happened. Now, supposedly, and it wasn't until the 50s and 60s when people started to come out about the bodies that were found at the crash site in Roswell, New Mexico. So the Air Force and other government figures said that the bodies most likely that people found were mistaken for wooden dummies that were approximately 6 feet tall, dressed up, and had latex over the wood to appear as skin. And that was to be a test for what would happen to the human body if dropped at such a height from an aircraft. So the government says this is actually mistaken identity. Well, what do you think? Do you think it was mistaken identity, or do you think there was more to this story? Let's continue. Nearly 50 years after the story of the mysterious debris broke, the U.S. military issued a report linking the incident to a top secret atomic espionage project called Project Mogul. Still, many people continue to embrace the UFO theory, and hundreds of curiosity seekers visit Roswell and the site every year. Now, the Roswell UFO incident is what we're going to cover next. One morning around Independence Day on 1947, about 75 miles from the town of Roswell, New Mexico, a rancher named Mac Brazel found something unusual in his sheep pasture. A mess of metallic sticks held together with tape, chunks of plastic and foil reflectors, and scraps of a heavy, glossy, paper-like material. Unable to identify the strange objects, Brazel called Roswell's sheriff. The sheriff, in turn, called officials at the nearby Roswell Army Air Force Base. And the soldiers fanned out across Brazel's field, gathering the mysterious debris and whisking it away in armored trucks, which would be military vehicles. On July 8th, the Roswell Army Air Force Base captures Flying Saucer on ranch in Roswell region. And that was the top story in the Roswell Daily Record. But was it true? On July 9th, an Air Force official clarified the paper's report. The alleged flying saucer, he said, was only a crashed weather balloon. That alleged person from the Air Force was also a brigadier general. Now, I'm going to stop myself real quick. The person who was sent out to do this investigation, Major Marcel, he reported this to the local papers as a flying saucer that was found in the desert. So the papers took it and ran with it. And then to correct his mistake, a brigadier general, a very, very high-ranking man in the military, almost as high as you can get, has to create a cover story. Does that not strike anybody odd and suspicious? Let's continue. The alleged flying saucer, he said, was only a crashed weather balloon. However, to anyone who had seen the debris or the newspaper photographs of it, it was clear that whatever this thing was, it was no weather balloon. Some people believe and still believe that the crash vehicle had not come from Earth at all. They argued that the debris in Brazel's field must have come from an alien spaceship. So, let's get into the dummy drops and the UFOs. Now, these skeptics grew more numerous during the 1950s, when the Air Force conducted a series of secret dummy drops over air bases, test ranges, and unoccupied fields across New Mexico. The experiments, meant to test ways for pilots to survive falls from high altitudes, sent bandaged, featureless dummies with latex skin and aluminum bones. Dummies that looked an awful lot like space aliens were supposed to be falling from the sky onto the ground, whereupon military vehicles would descend onto the landing site to retrieve the bodies as quickly as possible. Now, here's the fault in this. These dummies were based off of a 6-foot human frame. If you go into your research and you try to find anything out about the 3 or 4 supposedly recovered bodies of the aliens, air quote aliens, they're approximately 4 feet tall. Some bases are even shorter. So if one was to be faking this, why would eyewitness reports have a 2-foot difference between the size of the bodies recovered and the supposed dummy drops a few years later? But this is the problem in the 1950s, 1940s, is that when there's no evidence that's gathered, no evidence that is shared with the public, and the military immediately swarms upon it, any story can be made up. So thus, we are forced to go with whatever story it is that we are told. Sound familiar to anything happening nowadays? To people who believe the government was covering up the truth about the Roswell landing, these dummy drops seemed just as suspicious. They were convinced that the dummies were actually extraterrestrial creatures who were being kidnapped and experimented on by government scientists. Now, it turned out that the Army knew more about Mac Brazel, the farmer who recovered all this debris from the Roswell crash. It turned out that they knew more about Brazel's flying saucer than they let on. Since World War II, a group of geophysicists and oceanographers from Columbia University and from New York University and the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution on Cape Cod had been working on a top-secret atomic espionage project out at New Mexico's Alamogordo Airfield that they had named Project Mogul. Now, Project Mogul used sturdy, high-altitude balloons to carry low-frequency sound sensors into the tropopause, a faraway part of the Earth's atmosphere that acts as a sound channel. In this part of the atmosphere, sound waves can travel for thousands of miles without interference, much like under the ocean. The scientists believed that if they sent microphones into the sound channel, they would be able to eavesdrop on nuclear tests as far away as the Soviet Union. And these were very large balloons. Many times they were launched from vessels from the sea, like aircraft carriers. And some of them could get, gosh, I think it was up to 600 feet in length. So, you know, a very long object, a very large object, roughly about 600 feet, I think they said, possibly in circumference. So we're talking about a very, very large structure floating around in the sky, so high up to the point that the average person would not be able to notice it. But it's the floating up or the coming down, that's when it becomes noticeable. You have to understand that when military equipment is top secret and no one's supposed to know about it and it crashes and it's then recovered by a civilian populace, any story that can be wrote, covered up, will be wrote. Any person or any witness that can be talked to help, I guess you could say, cover it up, will be talked to. And even then, the Brigadier General who was in charge of this operation, this cleanup operation, he gave the authorization to his troops to use weapons and a degree of force to quiet people who were talking about this situation, especially people who claimed to be eyewitnesses or even secondhand witnesses. Now, according to the U.S. military, the debris in Brazil's field outside of Roswell actually belonged to this Project Mogul. It was the remains of a 700-foot-long string of neoprene balloons, radar reflectors for tracking, and sonic equipment that the scientists had launched from the Alamogordo base in June and that had evidently crashed in early July 1947. Because the project was highly classified, no one at the Roswell Army Airfield even knew that it existed, and they had no idea what to make of the objects Brazil had found. In fact, some officials on the base were worried that the wreckage had come from a Russian spy plane or satellite, information that they were understandably reluctant to share with the public. Now, this weather balloon story was flimsy and was the simplest and most plausible and quickest explanation that they could come up with on short notice. Meanwhile, to protect the scientists' secret project, no one at the Alamogordo could step up or step in and clear up this confusion. Now, let me give some commentary on that. We have two theories working right now. The two working theories is that A, this was a top secret government operation. It was a balloon that was sent up into the atmosphere, and it was used to monitor any type of atomic explosions from the Soviet Union. And it had eventually come down a little over a month later, and it had crashed randomly in this guy's sheep pasture. Or two, I guess we could go ahead and say three, or two, it was a top secret Soviet spy plane that had crashed out in the field. And we don't know the materials that were made, the hieroglyphs that were documented for being on a part of the, I guess you could say, expanded metal or a frame that was there on this recovered craft, debris, whatever it is that they keep wanting to label this as. The third option is the what if option that everybody loves to hear about. Now, I am always more interested in government cover-ups because of the amount of legwork it takes to keep a secret within the United States federal government is mind-numbingly outstanding. However, if the third option is real, if the third option is the actual option, then we have to ask ourselves, what happened to the alien vehicle? What happened to this extraterrestrial vehicle? Was it a drone? Was it a probe? Was it an actual vehicle piloted by actual beings? Were these actual beings, or were they the androids? If you get into the whole Roswell incident, you will come across probably well over a dozen rabbit holes. And then those rabbit holes will split and divide into other rabbit holes. And pretty soon you have about 24 different pages pulled up on your computer and you don't know which one is accurate. So you just read them all. Kind of what I've been doing. And I'll tell you this much. The problem with this is that people who weren't there and the people who get this story third and fourth hand, they then add to and take away from the story and they dilute it or they irradiate it and they make it spin to hit a narrative that they want out there. The problem is there are other people out there besides just the general public, who want a narrative to be wrote. They want a narrative out there. They're willing to give you bits and pieces of information. And I would say that you could bring this upon the eventuality of the disclosure, the alien disclosure. You could bring this upon an eventuality of something like Project Bluebeam or the Great Deception, as many Christians believe in. For me, I'm just a guy trying to do research. I just want to know. I'm not too far away from Roswell. I'm probably about 9 hours away. Maybe I'll go take a trip down there one day. But I promise you, besides the mere fact that what we see right now is obviously the chicanery of a cover-up, but I don't know why, if it was just a weather balloon that was just monitoring atomic energy from the Soviet Union, I don't know why it is that there are still so many missing gaps of information and time that the military or the government won't come out and just disclose. And there are many different options out there for that theory. And there are many different documents out there where the government will say that, hey, Roswell, case closed. We've solved the problem. We gave you the solution and the answer. And, you know, take it or leave it. But as I was telling you yesterday, just because the government gives you an answer does not mean it is the entire truth. When the government approves something, it will be signed off from the first incident commander. Then it'll be signed off on the public affairs people. It'll be blessed off by the lawyers. The director of the agency will bless off on it. And then going up the chains of command from the Pentagon and then from the White House, it'll be blessed off. And between all that, between the release of all those reports, that report makes it through about 10 different layers. And on its way up, it gets approved or it gets redacted. And then it gets sent back down for revision. That gets reproved or approved. And then it gets sent back up. Okay, we pass this section, and then it gets pushed up again and pushed up again. And oh, nope, cross this out. You can't say that. Cross this part out on the page. You can't acknowledge that. And it gets pushed back down through the process of redaction. Has to be redone, and then it goes back up the chain of command again until eventually we finally get a working piece of a paperwork that half of the material that we wanted on there is gone. And that's not for every case, but for some like this, it damn sure is. We don't know half of what happened at Roswell. They will tell you what happened. That doesn't mean that's the entire truth. Even in the midst of every lie, there are bits and pieces of truth there. All right, so let's continue with this. Today, many people continue to believe that the government and the military are covering up the truth about alien landings at and around Roswell. In 1994, the Pentagon declassified most of its files on Project Mogul and the dummy drops. Most of the files. Not all the files. Most of them. And the Federal General Accounting Office produced a report called the Report of Air Force Research Regarding the Roswell Incident. Now, this was designed to debunk the rumors. It was never designed to prove any truth. They weren't fact-finding. They were covering up. Nevertheless, there are still people who subscribe to the UFO theory, and hundreds of thousands of curiosity seekers visit Roswell and the crash site every year, hoping to find the truth out for themselves. The sad fact of the matter here is that the truth is the biggest victim out of all this. We're not going to know the truth, not the whole truth. You'll get bits and pieces, but that's why I've said for a long time, do your own research. Now, there's another article that's wrote on the History Channel. And I'll tell you why I like to go the route of using the History Channel. Because you would expect something that was blessed off by the military, by the government, and then sanctioned by the History Channel would have the most amount of its facts and the most amount of credible witness statements, credible testimony and evidence in its catalogs. You would expect that. Doesn't mean it's there, but it's the most credible because, once again, if I want to go down the David Icke route and say that everything is lizard people that live on the moon and live underneath, you know, Atlantis, well, go that route if you want. And there are plenty of other people who have different routes for them to go. I'm giving you my point of view as someone who was in law enforcement, someone who worked for the federal government. I want to be able to read a report wrote by the investigators. Now, more than likely, that's not going to happen. I will do the best of my research for it. And more than likely, that's what tomorrow will be, is the account of all the investigations that I can find on this subject. And we will be going over the whimsical, wild things that happened out here. Heck, we may be on a three-part series on Roswell, because there is a lot to cover. There's a lot to unpack. All right, so let's review this other article real quick. And this is another one from the History Channel. And this was updated on January 8th, 2021. That's why I kind of want to read it, because I want to see what is it that they believe has changed from now to then. Is there anything new that they're letting on? And I would say that there should be, because the first article was wrote in 2019. If you filled out the most of your information in your article in 2019, why did you update it and add two for 2021, 2 years later? Unless there's an agenda coming. Let's see. All right, so this is titled, What Really Happened at Roswell? Now, some of this may have the same information regurgitated in it. All right, in the annuals of American UFO history, few incidents have inspired us as much as the fascination and speculation as the one in Roswell, New Mexico. It began in the summer of 1947, at the dawn of the Cold War, when the United States Army Air Forces sent out a shocker of a press release announcing they'd recovered a flying disc from a ranch near Roswell. More than 70 years later, the incident remains a defining aspect of the area's identity. The town boasts a UFO museum and a research center, a flying saucer-inspired McDonald's, alien-themed streetlights, and even extraterrestrial family stranded in a broken-down UFO on the side of the road at State Route 285, looking for a jump start. That's cute. But behind all the UFO mania lies an uneasy truth. The events that transpired that summer are anything but clear and cut. With admitted cover-ups and conflicting explanations, it was a saucer, it was a spy craft, it was the Soviets. And new ones are still emerging. Here are the agreed upon facts about the Roswell crash. Sometime between mid-June and early July 1947, rancher W.W. Mack Brazell found wreckage on his sizable property in Lincoln County, New Mexico, approximately 75 miles north of Roswell. Several flying disc and flying saucer stories had already appeared in the national press that summer, leading Brazell to believe the wreckage, which included rubber strips, tin foil, and thick paper, might be something of that ilk. He brought some of the material to Sheriff George Wilcox of Roswell, who in turn brought it to the attention of Colonel William Blanchard, the commanding officer of the Roswell Army Airfield base. Sorry about that. The next day, the RAAF released a statement writing that the many rumors regarding the flying disc became a reality yesterday when the intelligence office of the 509th Bomb Group of the 8th Air Force, Roswell Army Airfield, was fortunate enough to gain possession of a disc through the cooperation of one of the local ranchers and the sheriff's office of Chavez County. According to that statement, Major Jesse Marcel, an intelligence officer, oversaw the RAAF's investigation of the crash site and the recovered materials. The following day, the Roswell Daily Record ran a story about the crash and the Air Force's astonishing claim. But the U.S. Army officials quickly reversed themselves on the flying saucer claim, stating that the found debris was actually from a weather balloon, releasing photographs of Major Marcel posing with pieces of the supposed weather balloon debris as proof. For decades, many UFO researchers were skeptical of the government's changed account. And in 1994, the U.S. Air Force released a report in which they conceded that the weather balloon story had been bogus. According to the 1994 explanation, the wreckage came from a spy device created for an until then classified project that called Project Mogul. The device, a connected string of high-altitude balloons equipped with microphones, was designed to float furtively over the USSR, detecting sound waves at a stealth distance. These balloons would ostensibly monitor the Soviet government's attempts at testing their own atomic bomb. Because Project Mogul was a covert operation, the new report claimed a false explanation of the crash was necessary to prevent giving away details of their spy work. Other elements of the Roswell story, namely that some eyewitnesses claimed that there were alien bodies taken from the site, were explained as fallen parachute test dummies in a more extensive follow-up report in 1997. The part I don't like about that is unbeknownst to the Army Air Force, this craft, this balloon, crashed in an open field. They had no idea about it. They were not monitoring it. They were not tracking it. They had no coordinates of the balloon. And at the same exact spot, that's where the Air Force also dropped off 3 to 4 test dummies. And they all landed in the exact same spot. If you've ever jumped out of a plane before, if you've ever thrown a leaf up in the air, you would know that it, whenever you released it, it doesn't float directly to a point of origin unless you predicted from here that it would float to here. I find it insulting that they would think we would believe such crap, because that's a very, very well done job by whomever it was flying at however many feet there were when they released these, you know, series of dummies. Did they have parachutes on them? Were they all released at the exact same time? Were they in any type of device that released while they were falling through the air so that they could all land within the exact same area? These details don't make sense. And if you know anything about physics, or if you know anything about being in the military, you'll know more than likely there was a dumbass 18, 19-year-old kid in the back of that, you know, I'm guessing, aircraft that was just willy-nilly dropping these dummies or were throwing them out the back, and they landed wherever they landed. So this story doesn't have a lot of credibility to me. Let's continue. Roger Lanius, a historian and retired curator of the Division of Space History at the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum, says those two reports close most of the remaining questions about Roswell. This story has been resolved, Lanius says. Has absolutely every question been answered? I can't say that, but I'm sure that there are significant holes. You do not divulge state secrets in the context of national security. My surmise is they probably saw the initial flying saucer explanation as a useful cover story. Okay. I wonder if maybe the weather balloons were the cover story. I wonder if maybe this top secret device from Project Mobile could have been the more accurate cover story. I don't believe in conveniences. And it's very convenient that everything landed within close proximity to one another. And I also don't believe in coincidences. I don't believe in the coincidence that everything would just so happen to willfully land within close proximity of one another, from the balloons and the drop dummies. And then the eyewitness testimonies of people that were standing there supposedly looking at these creatures, these aliens, and I'm going to use air quotes for this because I don't know. But this guy says there are not any missing gaps. What a lie. There are plenty of missing gaps here. Now, Donald Schmidt, who was a UFO researcher who has spent nearly three decades investigating the Roswell incident and is the co-founder of the International UFO Museum and Research Center in Roswell, says that explanation makes little sense. I agree with him. He said the flying saucer story, he contends, was so ostentatious that it was bound to draw attention to the area with its sensitive military operations at the time. Doing so would seem highly counter to the interest of the War Department. 2 hours west of Roswell, the first atomic bomb was detonated. You had an ongoing atomic research at Los Alamos, a place where Bob Lazar also worked at. You had also this testing of captured German V-2 rockets at the White Sands base in New Mexico. The V-2 rocket, the Vengeance 2 rocket, the thing that Joseph Goebbels had Wernher von Braun create to help destroy parts of Britain. And at Roswell, you had the first atomic bomb squadron headquartered. At Roswell was where the highly famous, you should have heard of it, the Enola Gay, the plane that flew over Nagasaki, that flew into Japan to drop, I think it was at least one of the two bombs. My memory's a little fuzzy on that one, but it was also stationed there. The thought that they would have intentionally set up any type of publicity as a distraction, if anything, they need less attention in that area. I mean, that realm of New Mexico is a hotbed for science and technology development for the U.S. military. Why would you then create this cover story of, oops, it was a flying saucer, nothing to see here? And that's when the flying saucer story was starting to get a lot of credibility within the public. Something is very sloppy about all this. Let me ask you a question. Put it down in the comments. For all you who are watching this on the Rumble and YouTube channel, do you think today's government would be this sloppy about a UFO or a supposed UFO that was crash landed somewhere in the desert and then recovered by a civilian. Do you think the same narrative would be used to cover up the UFO? Or do you think something else would come out of that, as in disclosure or the exposure of the unidentified flying object, the extraterrestrial vehicle? Another questionable theory, advanced by the book called Area 51, An Uncensored History of America's Top Secret Military Base, states that the crashed flying vehicle was neither extraterrestrial nor the work of U.S. spies. Rather, it was an unconventional plan to induce widespread panic implemented by Soviet strongman Joseph Stalin. An unnamed source who worked as an engineer at Area 51 for the defense contractor EG&G told the book's author, Annie Jacobson, that a veteran national security journalist and Pulitzer Prize nominee, that the program had been designed by Nazi concentration camp doctor Joseph Mengele. According to the source, adolescent children were deformed by the Soviets to resemble aliens and then deployed in an aircraft to fly over New Mexico. According to this book, Stalin's plan was for the children to climb out and be mistaken for visitors from Mars. Panic would ensue, and America's early warning radar system would be overwhelmed with sightings of other UFOs. That theory could go some way in explaining the wreckage described by Major Jesse Marcel Jr., or excuse me, by Jesse Marcel, which is the son of Major Marcel. According to Marcel Jr.'s book, The Roswell Legacy, his father brought some of the UFO wreckage home, allowing his son to handle the very debated debris before he took it back to the base. Now, Marcel Jr. wrote that the material was metallic. Quote, "I could see what looked like writing." That's the hieroglyphs that people have talked about. At first, I thought of Egyptian hieroglyphics, but there were no animal outlines or figures. They weren't mathematical figures either. They were more like geometric symbols, squares, circles, triangles, pyramids, and the like. Marcel Jr. was 11 years old at the time. The Cold War only just began. And could the young boy have been reading the Cyrillic alphabet for the first time, allowing his imagination to do the rest? On this, Schmidt and Lanius agree that it's not likely. And here's a quote. "There's no evidence in any Soviet archives that there were such experiments as this," says Lanius. "And if the intent was to generate panic, it failed utterly and miserably." Here's why I don't like this story. For one thing, when we have government officials who clearly helped to cover up whatever this crash was, whatever this debris was, and then they say the USSR had no documents of it either. Joseph Stalin was purposely disappearing people after they were murdered from pictures that he took with them. So we can't exactly trust what the USSR gives us as information. We also can't trust what our own government gives us as information from time to time. And the reason why I don't like this story of, you know, the mutated children being put inside an experimental craft that was then crashed or landed in the New Mexico desert, I have to ask a couple questions. Where was the craft launched from? Why New Mexico? Why children? And did you actually expect that the children would make a landing somewhere? Very sloppy. All that sounds very sloppy to me. Anyways, that is what we have for today. That is our first discussion into the Roswell UFO incident. We will have more. I go ahead, just expect tomorrow. We're going to continue to go over Roswell. I don't know how much more deeper we can get into this story before we start getting into a lot of fantastical crap. But, you know, I'll try and pull up as much information from witness testimonies that I can find. I think that'll be fun. For now, I just want you to know that there's a lot more to the Roswell case than what we're being told. There's a lot more to a lot of these cases than what we're being told. During that point in time in the 1947, just within that summer, there was over 300 cases of people identifying UFOs and then reporting them to government authorities. And we know during that time, shortly after World War II, that the Nazis were developing experimental aircraft. Some of them were disc shape. Some of them were triangular shape. And some of them did actually fly. We know that from Operation Paperclip, some of those Nazi scientists like Wernher von Braun were brought over to America to continue the research and development of these aircraft technologies and the rocketry that helped get us to the moon very quickly. So once again, we have to understand that there's always a hidden agenda here. There's always a narrative that the government must follow, and they want to make sure that you are reading the same narrative. I, on the other hand, don't believe half this crap that we're told. And the shame of it is that it's really too bad no one was there within the area, because you couldn't hide this now. Not with the way social media is made, not with the way phones are made. And people are very brazen now compared to then. You know, back then people were kind of sheepish when it came to the government, when it came to the military. When the military would show up, you know, I mean, you didn't get past them. Other things would happen if you did. But nowadays, people are very brazen, more than willing to go and sneak a peek and to video everything and, you know, video it live. Could you imagine? Could you imagine the next major crash somewhere out in the unknown parts of America as you're just driving by through the desert and a bright light crashes into the desert? You get out and you immediately Facebook live stream the next Roswell incident. How does the government cover that one up? That's the part that I find most interesting about this entire UFO thing. Most of the UFOs that we seem to experience or we seem to monitor and observe civilian-wise are always in the sky. Very rarely do you see the USO, the submerged objects. Very rarely do you see the objects that have landed or are within close proximity to the ground. And there are plenty of cases like that. There's a couple cases in Texas about that. We're going to get into that next week. But for now, that's all I got for you. I would like to give a big thank you to all the sponsors. To Steve Quayle at sqmetals.com. If you need any precious metals, please visit sqmetals.com. Pretty soon, the dollar is not going to be worth anything, but gold and silver, platinum, and palladium always will be. So visit Steve at sqmetals.com. We also have Bob Griswold at Ready Made Resources. It's kind of a one-stop and shop for most of your preparation needs, and not to mention night vision. Ladies and gentlemen, we have heard time and time again from Biden to Klaus Schwab to Putin that if the grid goes down, what are you going to do about it? And I'll tell you this much, One thing that we always said in the military is that we own the night, and that's because we own the night vision. Do yourself a favor. If you got the money, buy it now until, you know, it unfortunately will become illegal. You also have mountain-state-survival.com. Visit Jeff's website. Help support small patriotic businesses. That's another one-stop shop for all your other types of preparation needs, especially for camping survival gear. And that's really all I got for right now. Tomorrow, we're going to cover Roswell again. Tomorrow will be Friday. And I think we're going to get into some really crazy stories. We'll see how crazy these stories that are out there that I can find. But ladies and gentlemen, my name's Doug Thornton. You've been listening to American Vindicta. I'm out. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.